How do we talk to the next generation of conservationists about the loss of wildlife we cherish? The heath hen, once native to the East Coast, became extinct in 1932 with the demise of one last individual bird. A common grouse in the colonial era, the heath hen population dwindled to one bird living in Martha's Vineyard. Hunting and habitat loss led Booming Ben to become the very last of his kind. He earned his nickname for his unanswered mating calls. Christy Palmer Lowrance visited the National Conservation Training Center in April to talk about her new book for children, The Last Heath Hen. Christy deftly tackles the difficult topic of extinction and loss for a young audience through the carefully researched story of Booming Ben. Lowrance is also author of Nature's Ambassador, The Legacy of Thornton W. Burgess, the only biography of the children's author who influenced American conservation in the 20th century. I had the pleasure to interview Christy and get to the heart of scientific communication for children. This is the Future of Conservation podcast, where we feature thought leaders on the front lines of protecting wild places and wild things and share this story to inspire us to look at nature in a new way. I'm your co-host, Megan Bean, from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's National Conservation Training Center, located in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Joining me today in the studio is Christy Palmer Lowrance, who has joined us from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. She's a writer, a journalist, and author of now two books, and we're going to be talking about The Last Heath Hen, an extinction story, which she wrote for a younger audience. And the first thing I want to ask you, Christy, is why you chose to write a book for kids this time.
It's a little bit of a longish answer, but the first book that I wrote was a biography about Thornton Burgess, well known as a children's author, but one of the reasons I'm here and thrilled to be here is the pure story of conservation, the importance of conservation, and bringing the message of conservation to children. There was just a savviness about Thornton Burgess's approach. His books were describing an ecosystem. So he had all different types of habitat. He had mammals, he had birds, he had amphibians. And they were interacting, and the stresses on them and the needs of these different birds were, or creatures, were there for children to learn from. Mm-hmm. So his idea of going to a young audience with the science of environmental conservation was something that resonated with me. One of the stories that he told was the story of the last heath hen. And the significance of it, which Mark Madison has emphasized to me. Mark Madison, by the way, wrote the foreword to Nature's Ambassador. I'm very grateful to him. And he encouraged me to write about the last heath hen when I told him I was thinking about doing this. The idea of helping children understand extinction, not something from the distant past, but and not something that you just are casual about, but this is a true story. It's a nonfiction story about an extinction in 1933 on the island of Martha's Vineyard. So it's graspable, you know, for a child. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a children's writer, but it's a conservation story for children to be used by teachers and conservationists. That's my hope. That was my purpose.
Fantastic. So from this book, what do you hope parents or teachers glean from the story of The Last Heath Hen? You've talked about the meaning of explaining something like extinction to young children, but do you think the adults in their life will kind of come along the way with them?
I hope so, because one of the things that is part and parcel of the story is process. This isn't just a date and a creature, a species gone. This is a process. You know, it's quite possible that the pilgrims ate heath hens in the 1600s, and this extinction was in 1933. And efforts were made. As Mark said, it was a late extinction. And so the reasons, and it's a complexity of nature and of human contributions too. Cats played a role in the extinction, for example. So there's complexity to it, and I think if children can absorb that when they begin to talk when they're older and deal with extinction in whatever way they may, they have maybe a little richer understanding.
Absolutely. Mm. So can you tell me a little bit about the research process you had for writing The Last Heath End? Because I know you had to take down these facts and these stories and condense them into something that children and their teachers and parents can use.
Right. Well, there were some really very rich resources available to me, including Thornton Burgess's own eyewitness account of the Heath End, which I'll be reading tonight. And the description, his description as a writer of watching this last bird and the experience of listening to a bird where there is no other. Mm. There's no other. It's not just that there's no mate, there is no other. And listening to this bird call, it's impactful, deeply impactful. So to use his first person accounts in his autobiography, Alfred Gross, ornithologist from Bowdoin College, was also a part of this, the survey. Actually, Gross had been hired, and he invited Thornton Burgess to join him in surveying the heath hen on Martha's Vineyard. And Alfred Gross wrote a very detailed, thorough ornithological report on the bird. And there was a very powerful document called Journey to Extinction by Henry Beadle Huff on Martha's Vineyard, and it's an obituary of a bird. It's very extensive, but it just recounts the life of the bird on the island, not the one bird, which had a name, by the way, that was Booming Ben. The islanders named the bird. His sorrow, and I think Henry Beadle Huff's anger at the loss of the bird, was so deep. So as a journalist, he put together this paper. So that's available. I talked to conservationists, talked to Mark. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife has been well aware of the heath hen for many, many years. So Fish and Wildlife was a wonderful resource to use. And Mark's statement that the heath hen and the documentation of Thornton Burgess and Alfred Gross, the movies that they made, which will be seen tonight, by the way, and the photos that they took and the accounts that they made, provide documentation. And how did he put it? It's the only North American extinct species where the last individual in the wild is documented. And in this case, the heath hen isn't only documented, but the decision was made to capture it and to band it. So in case this was not the last, in case there was another somehow that they, you know, they just hadn't seen, if the leg bands were not on the bird, it would be known this was another bird. But if the leg bands were found, it was known to be that particular bird. And so It's a complete story, and it's told from many viewpoints. There were newspaper accounts, photographs, first person stories. One woman I interviewed told me that, and I had heard on the vineyard that people felt that they had run over the last heath hen. It hadn't just expired. No. They had done it in. Mm-hmm. So I called this one woman, was able to reach her in Massachusetts. And she said, yes, this was a dreadful family secret for years, you know, that their grandfather with his Model T had hit the heath hen and killed it, and all in the car, sworn to secrecy. But the conservationists that I've spoken with on the vineyard are kind of, yeah, right. You know, they're a bit skeptical, shall we say. The leg bands were intended to be definitive proof of the bird and possibly the way that it did finally go extinct. But those haven't been found, the leg bands with the numbers. One was copper, one was aluminum.
Maybe someday it will be found by an enterprising metal detector,
yeah,
perhaps.
It could be.
Yeah. I was thinking about how long of a history that Massachusetts has with conservation and how in the story about Booming Ben, it also seems like it's a story about Martha's Vineyard. So what is just so special to you about Cape Cod, where you live, or Martha's Vineyard, and how that ties in with wildlife and conservation?
Well, it's a flyway, of course. Cape Cod is a, you know, it's a major flyway for birds. But it's Cape Cod is a peninsula, so the awareness of whales and great white sharks and the marsh, the town I live in, Sandwich, has a, you know, very extensive salt marsh. And I don't think you can live there and not be aware of the interplay, you know, of marshes and mainland and bays and the wildlife that's a part of it. So it's a natural thing, I think, to take an interest in the wildlife.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense to me. I think something that almost came across to me as well is how, you know, this is the story of an individual within a species that's going extinct, which makes it much more personal, I think, and speaks to the heart of things. So you're able to achieve both that science communication, the facts, the story, you know, the relevancy of bird banding, but also kind of pull on people's heartstrings a bit with this one bird, Booming Ben. Can you speak to that intersection between communicating science and speaking to the heart in your work?
You hit on something that I think is tremendously important in both the books that I've written. And the heartstrings, the connection between the heart and science, if you use the word stewardship, it's an easy connection. It's not romantic. It's not just, it's something that's real and legitimate. And I think Thornton Burgess advocated for and believed in the stewardship of nature, and almost the science piece of it is, here's the world around us. Isn't it fascinating? Isn't it wonderful? There's so much to learn. And he used scientists from the Smithsonian, American Museum of Natural History. He had a radio program, and he had top scientists in the country on his program for children to provide them with answers. Children are naturally curious, and this was another thing he absolutely believed in, was nature as the universal teacher. He felt that children learn so easily from nature. And so he just made that connection. The sentiment piece of it is something that one of the reviewers of the biography, Kevin Armitage, commented on, this connection of sentimentality and science. And they serve each other, you know. And I remember William Hornaday at the turn of the century was coming out guns blazing to get the Migratory Bird Treaty Act passed. And I talked to one person who said Burgess was effective because he was an alternative to the guns blazing, the cannons firing, the, you know, the demand that it be seen this way. When Burgess wrote The Adventures of Poor Mrs. Quack, dads were having weeping children, you know, coming at them, "Daddy, you're killing Mrs. Quack. You know, how can you go hunting?" The sentiment can be a tool, but I think it's an honest tool. I think it's a natural tool. It's not manipulative. You know what I mean?
Of course, inviting people to care.
Right.
It's just one way of putting it. It's important.
Right. And without the caring, what is conservation? I mean, caring has got to be, you know, what better represents this interplay of caring and stewardship and sentiment, if you will, and science than U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
No.
You know, not to give you too big a plug here, but yes, to give you a plug, isn't that the heart of it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think intending this story for the younger generation and that intention to communicate a difficult topic like extinction.
Yes.
Do you think that children, and that's who we should really be doing a lot of our messaging around conservation for? Do you think we should be trying to reach children more with our messages?
I do. I think Thornton Burgess's belief was that it's so natural for children. And these days, it's another world, certainly. I'm not that idealistic to think that kids today have the same kind of understanding of nature he had. They absolutely do not. But that makes it perhaps even more important. It doesn't. This is one world, you know. We're in it. Wildlife is in it. You know, the creatures are in it. Mm-hmm. Habitat, we share habitat, you know. So there has to be a cooperative arrangement.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's is important, will always be important. Always. And any message that helps children. And it's a very wise thing, I think, to bring this type of education to children. As they grow, they have something in their backpack to take with them, some knowledge to take with them.
I agree. And I think, you know, before we started this conversation, you shared with me a passage from The Adventures of Bob White.
Yes.
I think it would be very appropriate to share that with our audience because it really does speak to that we All right. share the earth and that connection of the heart. Would you mind reading that for us?
Oh, sure. Of course.
And for everybody watching this, it's also got a beautiful cover and just gorgeous illustrations.
Yep.
I was really excited to see it when Christy brought it in.
Yeah, The Adventures of Bob White. When was this written? I think it was, let me see, 1919. And that was the year Thornton Burgess was given an award mm-hmm. for writing The Adventures of Poor Mrs. Quack. And he was credited with influencing millions of children to care about wildlife and nature, essentially.
And almost 100 years later, this message
right.
is still so critical.
Right, right. So this, as I was explaining to you, this passage, I've read 25 Burgess books in preparation for writing his biography. I had not seen this. I had apparently glossed over it, but I opened this up one day, and it took my breath away to see at chapter 16, of The Adventures of Bob White, Thornton Burgess's explanation for children of, it's being written for an adult, but to explain why we should care about wildlife. But this has to do with the relationship with wildlife in it. He writes, "If love prevailed everywhere, there would be no terrible wars, no prisons, no dreadful poverty, no bitter quarrels between those who work and those for whom they work. And on the green meadows and in the green forest, there would be no fear of man and no frightful suffering from traps and terrible guns. Love, that wonderful great thing which is contained in one little word of four letters, could and would bring joy and happiness to every heart for all time, if only we would give it a chance." And he goes on to say that it was love in the heart of Farmer Brown's boy that made him want to protect the quails, Bob White. But isn't that just so touching? Mm. Isn't that so beautiful?
It really is.
And kind of unexpected in a children's book to hear such a poetic statement.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
I do agree.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to like the hope that's in your work. It's an extinction story, mm-hmm. sure, but I think we're still kind of left with the questions and the perception of this event and how mm-hmm. we can move forward to prevent such things mm-hmm. in the future. So speaking of hope, what would your hopes be for the future of conservation?
Wow, that is such a big question that needs be met, all needs be met. And we all that enable, the needs be met that enable us all, you know, to survive, the understanding evolve too, you know, that we can, you know, all live together on this, you know, this planet. Yeah. It's a pretty big hope, I know. It's not like, you know.
It's a good one.
It's not like Copy of a Heath Hen in every, you know, every fourth grade classroom, but that would be a hope too.
Sure. Are you working on anything new right now?
Yes, I've been working on something a little bit different, another biography, but it's a biography of Dr. George Bass. He is the father of underwater archaeology. Yes, so I am exploring the world of archaeology and shipwrecks. And so George Bass, when he was 27, was charged with excavating the oldest shipwreck at the time in the Mediterranean. It was almost 100 feet deep. He didn't know how to dive, but he knew how to do archaeology.
Hmm.
And so it's just a It's a glorious story. I love it.
Oh,
I just love it.
So
the
exciting.
Research, talk about research. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Well, we'll have to be excited to look forward to that.
Yes,
one. It sounds
exactly.
like a really interesting topic.
Oh, thank you for asking.
Is there anything else that you want to share as kind of a summary of what's important about this book?
The only thing, well, it's a real pleasure, you know, to be here and have this chance to talk with you, because I am hoping that this will reach teachers and reach parents who want their children, want to have a hard conversation. I intended this as to put into the hands of people who are ready to have that hard conversation. And so, as you said, there are sections in the back on fire and wildlife and, you know, other topics and banding. And there are excerpts to describing resources. And I think you might have seen that.
Get to engage directly.
For the little ones, you know, to draw. But my hope is that the last part of the book resonate with children and with parents, with teachers. And do you mind if I read this?
Please do.
All right. So the story is told of the extinction. And then, as a writer, I'm thinking, well, all right, now what, you know? And I thought to give the story an ending for children. I wrote this. Why did scientists and conservationists and the people of Martha's Vineyard try so hard to save this beautiful wild bird that danced and pranced, stamped and twirled, boomed and hooted and tooted? Why was Booming Ben, the last heath hen, so important to people? For the same reason that you and I are important. In all the world, there was only one race of heath hens. In all the world, there was only one Booming Ben. In all the world, there's only one you and only one me. And when there is only one of something, it is very important to take good care of it. Mm-hmm. The end.
I can't think of a better ending.
Oh, I hope it resonates. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Christy Palmer-Lawrence, for joining us today. It's really been a pleasure having this conversation with you.
Thank you.
I'm sure everybody's going to enjoy your lecture.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
The Last Heath Hen encourages a love for nature and advocacy for those who cannot speak for themselves. While The Last Heath Hen story is tragic, it can inspire a future generation to learn from the lessons of the past. Let's keep working together and sharing stories to make a difference for wildlife and our shared future. To keep exploring the future of conservation, be sure to subscribe and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.